We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Now with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Day, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Diving deep into your Boston Red Sox, it's Red Sox Review with Brian Barrett, your exclusive home of the Sox, WEEI.
Here it is. Swing and a miss, pitch in the dirt, gets away briefly. Here comes the runner, home, the throw, and he's safe, and the ball game is over. Margot scores sliding, and Tampa Bay wins it 1-0. On a walk-off wild pitch, it didn't get all that far away, maybe 5 feet to the right of the plate. Christian grabbed it. Barnes was coming home, but Margot got a good break, and he scores the winning run. Tampa Bay runs off the Red Sox here. The final 1-0.
Oh, well, that sucks. That is just unfortunate, the way that that game ended for the Red Sox. Brian Barrett with you up until midnight. If you want to react to the Red Sox losing 2 of 3 in Tampa, this is after losing 2 of 3 to the Royals, and now they are no longer in first place in the division. 617-779-7937, the number. It just feels so disappointing because Nick Pivetta was so good in this game. 6 2/3 scoreless, 8 strikeouts. He was dominated. He has fastball 98, 99 miles an hour at one point. So you felt like he pitched well enough for a win tonight. He certainly did. He pitched more than well enough for a win tonight. And then unfortunately, they can't get anything from an offensive perspective. For the first time all season, Michael Wacha decides he's going to pitch well. He had a great changeup. I'm not like blaming the Red Sox for not being able to muster up any offense on Michael Wacha. He was nasty. He looked like 2013 Michael Wacha, and he had been one of the worst pitchers in Major League Baseball all season long. Guy had been absolutely atrocious for the majority of the season, and all of a sudden tonight, out of all nights, he decides to pitch well. Nick Pivetta matches him, and Nick Pivetta was better than him, and you end up losing this game on a walk-off situation where Matt Barnes, Mejia up at the plate, Mejia's got no chance to put the ball in play against Barnes, and unfortunately, it just ends up skipping away from Christian Vasquez. I mean, that's how you lose the game tonight. Absolutely sucked. Absolutely sucked to lose a game that way. Unfortunate. But the biggest thing to me is you did have a chance to get a run across earlier in the game. And this is what sticks out to me more so than anything else. The reason the Red Sox lose this game tonight, it's a fundamental thing, right? It's a fundamental thing. If you go back to what transpired in the top of the seventh inning. So Hunter Renfroe, who was having an outstanding night up until this particular point in time, he makes the great catch out there in right field. Really one of the only hard hit balls that Pivetta gave up on the night, right? That laser to right field, and he makes an incredible play out there, does Hunter Renfroe. But then he comes up and he gets ahead. He hammers a slider to double off when they had brought in Ryan Thompson there in the seventh inning. So he starts off the inning with that double, and you're thinking to yourself, all right, the Red Sox starting to cook with some gasoline here. Kike then rockets a slider, but it's right at Wendell, 99 miles an hour. You can't blame Kike there. And Kike, I will say this in regards to him, I don't want to make this a whole conversation about Hernandez, but he's starting to see the ball a lot better since they moved him out of the leadoff spot, which shouldn't be a surprise because he's not a leadoff hitter. He's seeing more pitches at the bottom of the order. This is where he should have been all season long. But anyway, I digress. After Kike rockets that slider, Vasquez, great piece of hitting, singles on a slider, but then Renfroe is gunned down by Kiermaier. And the issue here is this. We all know Kiermaier's a great outfielder and all that, but the problem was the base running from Hunter Renfroe. First of all, he got a bad jump. He got an absolutely bad jump. No doubt about that, bad jump. And then secondly, it's almost as if he hesitated coming around third base, which makes no sense whatsoever. You should be running as hard as you can until you see the stop sign. So that's the issue you have with Renfroe there, and he was out at the plate, and it was still a relatively close play, which shows you if he didn't hesitate or if he got a better jump or just a decent jump, either way he scores there, and the Red Sox bring in a run, and you're in a situation there where Vasquez, in all likelihood, is sitting there on first base after that or could advance to second, and you're in a scenario where you're cooking with gasoline even more because you only have one out in the inning. That's the situation you find yourself in instead of a situation where you find yourself in a top of the seventh where you have two outs. So that's the unfortunate thing. And then, oh, by the way, after that, you have an opportunity to maybe push a run across. Vasquez gets backpicked. Hey, this is stuff that cannot happen. You're in a game for first place. Nick Pivetta pitched his ass off. 6 2/3, scoreless innings, no hits. Yelling at himself left and right. It was awesome watching the guy yell at himself in the dugout. Oh, and he's punching whatever he's punching there. It's like the ice bucket or whatever. I love the intensity from this guy. We'll get into the positive because Pivetta was really good tonight. But you get that type of outing from your starting pitcher. And you know, on the other side, Michael Wacha had it going on. And we know that the Rays have a pretty good bullpen this season. They have pitched really well in the pen. You have a golden opportunity to take a lead, and you're unable to do it. And even when you have, I get it, it's a small chance to score there when you're looking at Marwin Gonzalez pinch hitting there for Bobby Dalbec. And by the way, you have to pinch hit for Bobby Dalbec at this particular point in time. And really, Dalbec should be embarrassed that they're pinch hitting Marwin, because a week ago, Bobby Dalbec was red hot, and he's really struggled as of late. And they're bringing in Marwin Gonzalez, a guy hitting, what, under the Mendoza line. He's below the Mendoza line right now for you because of the way that Bobby Dalbec just, you can't trust him to put the ball in play right now. I mean, that's just where Dalbec's at. But even if you say, all right, well, Marwin ended up striking out the next inning, well, maybe there's more pressure on Thompson when he's dealing with a situation where he has a runner on second base and somehow Vasquez gets backpicked. I mean, it's inexplicable. You may not one, but two base running blunders in the same inning, which is just unfortunate. You look back at this game, if you're the Red Sox, and you're thinking to yourself, you're flying home from Tampa tonight, getting ready to play the Yankees, and you're asking yourself the question, why the hell did we lose this game? Well, it's because you couldn't run the bases. It is basic stuff. And look, on the same side of things, you could say, well, the Rays are horrible on the bases as well. I certainly would agree with that. The Rays are absolutely atrocious on the bases, but it seems like it's an epidemic throughout the sport right now. The teams, quite frankly, just cannot run the bases. But the Red Sox lost this game tonight because they couldn't run the bases. That's why they lost, because they couldn't run the bases, which is just incredibly aggravating. 617-779-7937 is the number. You'll hear from the manager, Alex Cora, in just a little bit, his reaction to this one. I'm sure he's going to be asked about Hunter Renfroe getting gunned down at the plate, Christian Vasquez getting backpicked, what the hell transpired there in the ninth inning as well. Let's kick it off tonight with Ken in California. Ken, what's up, man?
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
How's it going? Listen, typical Alex Cora team. Last time he was here, same thing. Lousy defense and horrible base running. There is no excuse. That's fundamental baseball, and they do not execute it. And I'm not so sure that they've got the best third base coach either. I understand Renfroe hesitated, but he's got to throw the stop sign. He's got to know the out.
No, Ken. He's got to be running there. He should be running there. It's a tie ball game. He should be running. If he doesn't hesitate there, he scores. You needed a perfect throw to gun him out when he hesitated not once but twice.
And you had the guy out in the outfield who can make the perfect throw.
Yes, but he made the perfect throw to get him, okay? If he doesn't hesitate, he scores.
But, you know, this has been symptomatic of this team all along. Think back the last few games even, all the errors that they make. They put themselves in the hole. They put their pitchers in the hole.
Yeah, and Chavis made a critical error tonight as well. Well, he didn't cost you.
Here's a guy, well, I know Vasquez, you know, one of the things with Vasquez is, his throwing has not been very good this year. I don't know what happened to him. He used to be a tremendous thrower from the plate.
Yeah, you're right about that. That was awful tonight, the throw that he made as well there in the ninth inning. And Ken, appreciate the phone call as always. His line's open if you want to grab it at 617-779-7937. The one thing I can't agree on is he says this is typical of an Alex Cora team. This is an epidemic across the sport right now where teams cannot run the bases. It's not just unique to the Red Sox. If you look at the Rays, they have the same problem right now. They really struggle on the base paths. Bottom line, no doubt about it. They struggle on the base paths as well. And typical Alex Cora team. I mean, he's managed now, what, 2.5 years in Major League Baseball. 1 year he won the World Series. And this year his team entering tonight was in first place. Now they're in second place in the division. Here was Alex Cora after the game tonight.
That must have been the toughest loss of the year by the Sox.
All depends how you see it. You know, I thought it was a great baseball game. You know, we ended up losing 1-0. We did a lot of good things. We did a lot of bad things. And at the end, you know, they got a good lead at third. The ball gets away from Christian. They win the game. But, you know, I got to be honest with you. You know, like a lot of people, you know, they didn't believe in this team before the season. I think the way we play against these guys tonight shows how good we are. And we have a lot of work to do. We know that. But we belong in the conversation. We're really good. And it's going to be a fun summer in Boston.
Can you talk about Nick?
Amazing. It was amazing. Good fastball, good slider, good breaking ball. I mean, he was into it. It was I love the way he went about it in the first inning. He was more aggressive than his previous starts. It kind of like set the tempo, you know, and you know, the fastball was playing today. And that's what he has to do. You know, when he uses his fastball in the strike zone the way he did tonight, the other stuff plays. He threw a few changeups too, something he did against them in spring training, and it worked. You know, it was an amazing job. Everybody did a great job, you know. The two lefties, Ottavino, Barnsley, too. It just happened that pitch got away, and they did a good job running the bases.
What are some of the things you would like to see the Sox improve on?
So what?
What are some of the things you would like to see the Sox improve on?
Us?
Yeah. Yes.
I mean, you know, we got work to do, obviously. We got to keep getting better defensively. We got to put good at bats. We got to pitch better. I think all around we're a good baseball team. I've been saying it since spring training. And, you know, not because you lose 2 out of 3 against these guys, it doesn't mean that we're going the other way. You know, we are where we are in the standings. We know that. We put ourselves in this conversation, and now we just got to keep playing consistently.
Alex, how tough of a decision was it to take Nick out at that point?
It wasn't tough. You know, this is, you know, it's a 0-0 game. We have one of the best lefties in the game, probably the best lefty throwing the ball in the game. And, you know, it was a no-brainer.
Had you guys had a lead at that point, would you have let him go more?
We didn't have the lead there, so I had to make the decision. I don't know how I would react, you know, if we had the lead.
Alex, a couple of base running plays. Looked like Renfro hesitated just a bit on the out at the plate. And then what happened with Vasquez getting picked at second?
Yeah, Christian trying to get a good secondary. And he was overly aggressive with the swing, and he got caught in no man's land. With Hunter, you know, you got to make sure that, you know, it seems like a bad read, but, you know, you got to make sure, you know, the ball finds green, you know, and we were aggressive there. It was a close play at the plate, but I don't think it was a bad base running play by him.
All right, that's Alex Cora after the game. What do you make of his comments? 617-779-7937. Brian Barrett with you up until midnight. So I understand that initially Renfro did not get a good read on that, right? What Alex Cora was just talking about there. I understand that. What I'm wondering about and what Alex Cora didn't answer is, what happened with the hesitation at third? That's the question that I have. Why did he hesitate when he got to third? Because even with the poor read that he got on that particular play, if he doesn't hesitate at third, he still has the opportunity to score there. And with Vasquez, I understand what Alex Cora is saying, but you can't get backpicked there at that particular point of the game. I know that Vasquez is trying to be aggressive in case Marwin puts the ball in play, which I know at this particular point in time, we don't see a whole lot of that. But anyway, if he does put the ball in play, he wants to try to score in that position, especially considering it's a scoreless game. But you can't do that. I mean, you can't make mistakes on the base paths. These are simplistic things that you just cannot be doing, especially when first place is on the line in the division. What I felt was kind of weird about Cora's press conference tonight, It felt like he was way more positive than I would have assumed he would have been. And I know that he has an incredible pulse of his team. He's always great at that, right? He knows exactly what his team needs. He knows what buttons to push. We've seen this throughout the years with Alex Cora. He knows when to get on the guys, right? I mean, you think about it with individual players. He knows when to call Rafael Devers out, whether it be publicly, whether it be to him. He knows when to push Eduardo Rodriguez's buttons. He understands the pulse of his team. He knows he does that better than maybe anybody else in the sport, right? But I don't understand this tonight. Saying tonight shows how good we are. How does tonight show how good you are? I mean, Michael Wacha went five scoreless innings, did not give up an earned run, and he gave up one hit, and he had seven strikeouts. And Michael Wacha coming into tonight's game had quite frankly been atrocious. Now, I have admitted he was good tonight. Like, he had good stuff. That changeup looked like the changeup we saw a couple of years ago. I should say more than a couple of years ago now. 2013, which, oh, by the way, what happened to this guy? He was a great pitcher in that World Series in 2013. He was a great pitcher in 2013. I know that he had some injury issues and all that, but you don't score a single run tonight. I don't know how this game tonight showed how good you were, because quite frankly, I mean, Nick Pivetta was great. He was outstanding in this game. But what else were you looking at this and you take away from a Red Sox perspective and say, oh yeah, we feel really good about this? I don't know what it is outside of the starting pitcher tonight. Pivetta was great. Now, the bullpen was fine. I mean, Barnes in the ninth inning, I thought he was okay. He did not have his best curveball tonight. And unfortunately, I mean, Margot gets a little slap hit to keep the inning going. It's not like it was loud contact or anything along those lines. But anyway, getting back to the original point, Taylor was really good tonight. Darwinson was okay. I mean, he did not have his best stuff. He did not have his command, which is obviously an issue with Darwinson. But Ottavino pitched well when he came into the game. So, yeah, you got good pitching, but you didn't get anything in terms of timely hitting in this game. And you still have an issue at the leadoff spot. I mean, I understand that it's great that Danny Santana wasn't in there tonight, but it's Michael Chavis, which Michael Chavis is not the answer. I know it felt like today people were excited just that Danny Santana was out of that spot, but Michael Chavis, we all know he's not the answer to hit leadoff in this lineup, really? Michael Chavis, he came into tonight, like, when he was up earlier this season, I get it, small sample size, but he had a 39% strikeout rate. You go back to Michael Chavis when he has played here over the past couple of years, his strikeout rate is in the mid-30s. He's a high strikeout guy, so I don't understand the Red Sox fixation with putting guys up there in the leadoff spot that love to strike out. Danny Santana strikes out all the time, and Michael Chavis strikes out all the time. Now, look, the Red Sox are kind of handcuffed right now with the fact that, unfortunately, and it sucks for the Red Sox, that Christian Arroyo is not healthy. He's not ready to go right now because he's dealing with that knee bruise. Of course, he suffered that over the weekend against the Royals when him and Kike Hernandez had that little bit of a collision, and unfortunately it did not respond the way that they hoped it would respond. That's your answer right now, because for whatever reason they don't want to put Verdugo in that leadoff spot. I don't know why they didn't do that at the beginning of the season, but anyway, getting back to the whole idea with Arroyo is supposed to be there, not Chavis, but I don't know why that means you have to put Chavis in the leadoff spot tonight. And if it's not going to be Verdugo, you really don't have a lot of other good candidates to put in that spot, so you put Chavis there. But you look at Chavis tonight, I mean, he was bad. He swung at 12 pitches, missed on five of them. So if you look at it from that perspective, that's what 42% of the pitches he swung at he missed on. This is like what we've seen with Michael Chavis throughout his major league career. The guy swings and he misses a whole lot. He had two strikeouts again tonight. This is what Michael Chavis does. He strikes out a lot. This is my frustration, and this is sort of my aggravation with Michael Chavis. I don't see any type of improvement with the player. I don't see it. I don't see the improvement with Michael Chavis whatsoever. Do you? I mean, what has Michael Chavis gotten better at over the past couple of years? So I understand that at this particular point in time, the Red Sox are in a situation where they're handcuffed, right? I mean, they don't have a lot of options right now because of the fact that Christian Arroyo is dealing with an injury. For whatever reason, they don't want to bring Jarren Duran up, and we'll get into that in just a little bit. But if these are your options right now and Michael Chavis is up because of the injury, I understand that they don't have a lot of other options to put out there at second base, or I guess technically tonight he played second, then he moved over to first when they pinch hit Marwin for Bobby Dahl back. But I just don't believe the player is that great. And at this point in time with Chavis, I feel like the most use he could provide to this organization is sort of as a trade chip, right? Where another team looks at itself or looks at Chavis and says, you know what, a couple of years ago, 2019, he really displayed the power tool. Still a relatively young player. new scenery, so to speak. Let's bring him into our organization, right? That's what I think the play is with Michael Chavis. I don't believe he's this stint now is going to be a long stint. Whenever Chris Arroyo's healthy, he's going to be going back down to AAA. I just don't see the value, quite frankly, that he provides for the team. I guess there's some sense or some level of versatility, if you will, because he can play second and he can play first, but I don't see any improvement with his approach at the plate. I know Alex Cora mentioned before the game that he's actually, and his numbers are actually good at the AAA level, but we've seen it. His numbers at the major league level have never really been good, and he strikes out way too much. We saw it tonight, and he booted a ball at first base. So he comes up tonight, one error, two strikeouts, swung and missed at 5 of the 12 pitches that he swung at. That's what you got from Michael Chavis tonight. So he's not going to be any sort of contributor whatsoever. And the Danny Santana thing, I'm done with that. I know he wasn't in the lineup tonight, but I'm done with that experiment. I don't get it. I really don't understand it whatsoever. 617-779-7937, the number. Let's get to Wally in Fall River. What's up, Wally?
What's up, Brian? I mean, it's a shame you had to waste an effort like that. It was just what the doctor ordered after last night. But we haven't scored a run since, what, the first inning last night. But if I'm Heim Bloom, I'm calling up Miami and see what Miami wants for Marte. That would solve the problem. You got four guys in there, man, what, 199, 115. I mean, I know you're a big fan of Bobby Dalbec, and, you know, he's just not into it. He strikes out 40% of the time.
Yeah.
Same with Chavis. We got a very weak bench. You know, but what scares me most is you get the Yankees coming to town, who everybody was burying a week and a half ago. Now they seem to revive. But, you know, you got to win at least 2 out of 3 with the Yankees.
Yeah, the other guy, too, they got back, Wally, recently, who's been playing well for them, is Luke Voit. So that's another sort of landmine in that I appreciate the call, Wally. That's a landmine in that lineup that you're going to have to deal with over the weekend because they didn't have Voit the last time around. Now, another thing about that series to remember is last time when you played the Yankees, you didn't see Gerrit Cole. You will see Gerrit Cole in this series on Sunday. So that's another thing to factor into the equation coming up this weekend. And the Red Sox, and I wonder too, Alex Cora, the positivity you heard in that press conference tonight, I wonder if that's trying to get his team in a better state of mind, so to speak, because they've been playing poorly over the past week or so, dropping 2 of 3 to a bad Royals team and dropping 2 of 3 to this Tampa Bay Rays team that, remember, coming into this series had lost 6 consecutive games. So I'm wondering if Alex Cora is trying to sort of reinstill some confidence in his team. I know Wally likes the idea of Starling Marte. I brought up the fact that ESPN Plus had this article up about 2 days ago. I believe it came out on Wednesday where they put up what every team needs at the deadline. And they said, as Drubal Cabrera, that's who they suggested. And it would make a lot of sense because he can play first base. He can be a platoon option for Bobby Dalbec, and he's basically the opposite of Bobby Dalbec. Like, he doesn't strike out a lot. He walks a lot. Bobby Dalbec's now become a problem over the past week. And it's so frustrating because it felt like he was coming out of that slump, right? And we heard about all the work he was doing in terms of on the field, the fastball machine. He was doing all this stuff to get into a better place in terms of his approach at the plate. And, man, the Rays really exposed him over the past couple of days. He struck out 9 times in the series. 9 times. And I'm going to give you some more numbers on Bobby Dalbec, just how bad it's been in terms of the swings and misses this season. It's been a real issue for Dalbec. All right, 617-779-7937 is the number. We will react to Nick Pivetta's start because that's the big positive from this thing. Do you feel better about the rotation knowing that Nick Pivetta gave you this type of start tonight? What should the Red Sox do with the Jarren Duran situation? Are we now at a place where, considering this team is struggling, that they need to bring up Jarren Duran? That's on the table. What do you want to see Heim Bloom do at the deadline, and what's going on in the base path? 617-779-7937, the number. Brian Barrett with you up until midnight right here on WEI.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
You're listening to Red Sox Review on WEEI.
That must have been the toughest loss of the year by the Sox.
All depends how you see it. You know, I thought it was a great baseball game. You know, we ended up losing 1-0. We did a lot of good things. We did a lot of bad things. And at the end, you know, they got a good lead at third. The ball gets away from Christian. They win the game. But, you know, I got to be honest with you. You know, like a lot of people, you know, they didn't believe in this team before the season. I think the way we play against these guys tonight shows how good we are. And we have a lot of work to do. We know that. But, we belong in the conversation. We're really good. And it's going to be a fun summer in Boston.
All right, that was Alex Cora after the game tonight. This hour brought to you by Feldman Surveyors. At Feldman, they get it right from the ground up. Brian Barrett with you until midnight. What do you make of this one for the Red Sox as they drop a difficult game in Tampa to the Rays? 617-779-7937. So, first of all, that's just a brutal way to lose a baseball game. Mejia struck out. I mean, he's nowhere close to that thing. Matt Barnes throws him a nasty curveball, one of the better curveballs that Matt Barnes threw in that inning. And Margot scores because the ball gets away from Christian Vasquez. It's ruled a wild pitch. And look, it's a tough ball to stop in that particular scenario. But that's how you lose the game. You pitched well all night. You got a great start from Nick Pivetta. That's how you lose. You lose on a strikeout. I mean, it's incredible to me. Like, that's just going to be incredibly infuriating. But what is kind of more surprising to me was Alex Cora's reaction to that when Johnny Miller asked him, of course, that's got to be the toughest loss of the season. I guess he didn't really ask him. He said, that's got to be the toughest loss of the season, right? And Cora responds by saying, it depends how you look at it. And then he talks about the fact that we're a really good team. It's going to be a fun summer in Boston. And he went on in his press conference about how nobody believed in us before the season. I don't understand why we're going backwards here. Now we're in a position where everybody thinks you're good. Everybody knows you're a good baseball team. I don't understand it. Like, we don't think Richards is good anymore. Sure. I don't think anybody can believe in Garrett Richards going forward. He may be a nothing for this organization going forward, right? I mean, we saw it last night. He cannot pitch without the stuff, right? So when you look at it from that perspective, yeah, everybody's down on Richards. But for the most part, everybody's still relatively high on this baseball team. In fact, the bullpen's been great. Nobody can dispute that. Ottavino's been one of the best relievers in the entire sport. He's number two in all of baseball in terms of relievers in called strike percentage, north of 25% of the time. Josh Taylor's now in a situation where he's had 22 scoreless appearances. Okay, Sal Amora, I believe he throws the hardest splitter I've ever seen in my life, okay? And he's been great as of late. And we know Matt Barnes has been good for the majority of the season. He leads Major League Baseball in strikeout rate. He was not incredibly sharp tonight. His curveball has not been great as of late, and he did. It seemed like he kind of found it a little bit later in the inning. So we feel good about the bullpen. We feel good about the lineup, even though lineup did not show up tonight for the most part, and Michael Walker decided he was going to take a trip back to 2013 and turn back into the pitcher that he was years ago. But for the most part, we think this team's pretty good. So I don't know what Alex Cora was doing there in his press conference tonight. That was one of the toughest losses for the Red Sox this season. There's no way around it. Now, there's been a couple of games where they've been blown out in. Like, I would not categorize last night's loss to the Rays as a difficult loss or a tough loss because your pitcher went out there and he sucked, right? I mean, that's just the reality of what transpired last night. Garrett Richards did not have it. You've had a couple of games like that over the past couple of weeks, right? Now, I know Martin Perez found it against the Royals, but a couple of weeks ago, I mean, his two outings before that, he's going an inning and two-thirds and an inning, right? So those losses aren't as difficult as a loss like tonight because you felt like you had opportunities and you lost because of fundamental mistakes. So I have to believe that the reason Cora is saying this after the game tonight is because, as I have mentioned, he knows the pulse of his team. He's trying to get his team up because think about it. You just lose 2 of 3 to the Royals, and now you lose 2 of 3 to the Rays, and you go in there and you lose first place in the division, right? The Rays now come away from this one as the first place team in the American League East because they took the final two games of this three-game series, and Alex Cora doesn't want his team to be down, right? Because it's a long 162-game season, but more importantly, you have the Yankees coming into town for the weekend. And the Yankees are now, with the exception of Aroldis Chapman, playing the best baseball that they've been playing all season long. Luke Voit has certainly given that team a jolt, had a big hit last night in the game that they won. So Alex Cora is going to turn the page quickly. So I feel like that's what this is about tonight in terms of what Alex Cora is saying, because I guarantee what Alex Cora said to the media tonight is similar to what he said to his clubhouse, that he's trying to make sure that these guys are still engaged and try to instill confidence in them because they're playing poorly right now or the results have not been great over the past couple of, or the past week for the Red Sox, that he wants to try to make sure that this team remains confident so that when they come back to town and they get ready for the Yankees, this loss that they just had to the Rays is behind them. Because this is an awfully difficult loss, but you got to put it away because you have a huge series coming up against the Yankees. All right, 617-779-7937 is the number. What did you make of the Sox loss tonight? The poor base running, that's on the table. If you want to weigh in on the Garrett Richards situation, you can. Nick Pivetta's outing tonight, that's on the table, of course. And what do you want to see Chaim Bloom do at the deadline now as we get closer to that? And what should Alex Cora be doing with the leadoff spot? 617-779-7937. Now, I felt really good about Bobby Dahl back at about this time last week. He was in the middle of a hot streak. But what we saw against the Rays is his hot streak has come to a screeching halt, and they really exposed him in this series, right? So 9 strikeouts in the past 3 games, and the biggest indictment on Bobby Dahl back is that Alex Cora pinch hit Marwin Gonzalez for him, right? I mean, that's when you know you're going really bad. And I get it. You want to get the favorable matchup, if you will, to get the lefty against the righty. I understand all that. But if Bobby Dahl back was swinging the bat like he was 5 days ago, there's no way Alex Cora makes that move. It's just right now, Bobby Dahlback's in a really bad spot. So if you look at this, of the batters with at least 210 plate appearances this season, Bobby Dahlback has a 37.9% strikeout rate, and that's going up. That is 170 out of 171 hitters. Only one guy in baseball, by the way, it's Javier Baez of the Chicago Cubs. Only one guy is striking out more than Bobby Dahlback. He has a 35.7% called strike plus whiff rate, which essentially means called strikes or whiffs. That's at 35.7%. That is last of the 171 hitters in Major League Baseball with 210 plate appearances. Okay, an 18.3% swinging strike percentage. That is 167 out of 171 hitters. 62.4% contact rate, 170th. Out of 171 hitters. Tonight, he swung at 6 pitches. He whiffed on 3 of them, so 50%. So the numbers have just been so bad with Bobby Dahl back in terms of the swing and miss, not just the strikeout rate, but the individual swings and misses as well. And you thought that last week he had sort of turned a corner, right? You felt positive about the player going forward. But what we've seen when he went up against a good team in the Rays, and not even great pitchers for the most part. Like, yeah, I understand that tonight Walker had it going, but for the most part, it's not like, now Tampa does have a really good bullpen, but it's obviously a well-run organization, a well-coached team, so to speak, and they were able to expose Bobby Dahlback, unlike a team like the Royals over the weekend, where that's a team that that pitching staff and that bullpen in particular, they don't have a whole lot of stuff to get you out with. What we saw tonight with a team like the Rays and what we've seen over the past couple of nights, this is a team that is really into its scouting reports, and they are going to try to expose your weaknesses, so to speak. And they're certainly doing that with Bobby Dahl back right now. So that's why when you look at it going forward, you're going to need another option at first base. It's certainly not Michael Chavis. Michael Chavis is up at the big club right now because of the injury. That's it. I cannot believe that the Red Sox actually think this guy is a solution for anything with this team right now, because the player has not improved. That's why he comes up and he goes right back down, because he continues to strike out every time he's up at the big club. Two strikeouts tonight, an error in the field. He's not the answer. I suggested ESPN Plus had an article up this week about Asdrubal Cabrera and the possibility of bringing in a guy like that, because he does handle the bat well. He's pretty much the opposite of Bobby Dalbec when it comes to not striking out and getting on base. I mean, you look at him on the season, he's 35. He has a 3.48 on base percentage. His walk rate's at 13.5%. That's 22nd out of 217 players that have had at least 170 plate appearances. It would be number one on the Red Sox. We know as a team, the Sox do not walk much, just 3.58 times per nine innings. That's 21st in Major League Baseball. And his strikeout rate's at 20.2%. That'd be third on the team behind Bogarts and Verdugo. And we know Bobby Dalbec's up approaching 40%, right? So when you look at it from that perspective, not to mention he can hit from the left side of the plate. So this is a veteran that would be great for a team that, for a great offense like the Red Sox have, they need more guys that make contact and don't swing and miss. And Asdrubal Cabrera certainly makes sense to me. He's on a $1.7 million contract for 1 year. It's not going to cost you next to nothing, really, I should say. It's going to cost you not much at all to bring in a guy like that, to give you a nice platoon option at first base. I still want to give Bobby Dalbec opportunities, but you have to have another option at first base. And right now, you don't have an option on the roster. There's not another option at first base because Chavis is not that. Who's your other option at first base? Danny Santana? We've seen that. He does not handle the bat well whatsoever. I mean, you look at Santana on the season. If you're talking about him playing first base, I know he plays a lot of outfield as well, of course, but he has a 65.2% contact rate. That's 383rd out of 405 hitters that have had at least 60 plate appearances this season. So he's not the answer at first base. So it's going to have to be an external thing, and Asdrubal Cabrera from the Arizona Diamondbacks makes a lot of sense. Played in a lot of big games as well. Was on that World Series team with the Nationals just a couple of years ago. All right, 617-779-7937 is the number. Brian Barrett with you up until midnight. Let's get to Derek. He's in California. What's up, Derek?
Hey, how's it going, Brian?
Good.
I just wanted to say real quick, really love the way you analyze all the players and the statistics and everything. But what I wanted to know was with Richards, right? Like, what are we going to do, you know, with all these players now that have to, I don't know, reinvent themselves because they don't know how to use a ball that isn't as sticky, because this is going to be really poor for us. We only have already have a 5-man rotation, and hopefully Sale's going to be coming along, but you know, like this is all going to be bad. And my second question is, Chavis, you know what? I totally agree with you. I'm sorry. I love the guy, but he strikes out way too much. You know, they keep pushing him down to AAA. I 100% agree with you. He's got just a really good trade option, I feel. But you know what? That guy's never going to do anything for the Sox if he just keeps getting pulled up one game at a time.
Yeah, well, and he may be the guy that you say, hey, if Arizona's a team that's obviously rebuilding, they had lost like a million road games in a row this season. They're one of the worst teams in the entire sport. You say, hey, yeah, we'll take Michael Chavis. Say he's a young player, and maybe he's got some potential going forward. And it's not like Asdrubal Cabrera is part of the next great Arizona Diamondbacks team. So I would be willing to flip Michael Chavis in a second for a guy like Cabrera, who handles the bat well, who puts the ball in play, and he fills a need that this team desperately needs, a guy that can hit from the left side of the plate, can play a good first base from a defensive perspective, and gives you good at-bats. That's something you're going to need later on in the season. So I would certainly do that. To your other question, Derek, about guys not being able to pitch without the sticky stuff, I think that Garrett Richards is like one of the only guys, or maybe one of the only guys on this team, I should say, where it's just like, it looks like his career is over. Bottom line, that's how I interpret it. But if you want to look at it from a positive perspective, Nick Pivetta, 6 2/3 scoreless innings tonight. The spin rate on his curveball was actually up. He had his best curveball of the season, I would argue, tonight. So I wouldn't worry about most of the staff with the exception of Garrett Richards. Garrett Richards is a major problem, but I wouldn't worry about the rest of the guys. Pivetta's fine. Nate Evaldi's never been a big spin rate guy to begin with, so he's going to be okay. Prez was pretty good in his last outing after having two hiccups. And Erod's not a massive spin rate guy either. So I think in terms of the starting rotation, you can have concerns about each guy. But in terms of the sticky stuff, the question you were asking, the only guy I'd be concerned about is Richards.
100% agree with that. And my only other comment on that is that Major League Baseball is going to have to do something, right, really soon about this. Because, I mean, you take Joe Girardi the other day, right, three times on Scherzer. I mean, you know what, they're only taking advantage of the fact that they can ask about it right now. But, I mean, in the near future, they're going to have to do definitely something about the ball, because we can't be doing this back and forth all game long. I mean, the pitchers are fed up with it. They don't want to deal with it. It's a joke.
Yeah, I don't like him. Derek, I appreciate the call. His line's open if you want to grab it at 617-779-7937. I don't like what happened to Scherzer in the middle of an inning. I don't have a problem. And by the way, he's one of the guys that was communicating with that clubhouse dude with the Angels who is filing the lawsuit against everybody because of the fact that he was basically made out to be the scapegoat in the whole situation. Remember, you had all these text messages from the Scherzers of the world, the Garrett Coles of the world, where they were asking him, and Scherzer was asking him to overnight him substances. So I don't feel bad that Scherzer's being checked. But in the middle of an inning's the thing that I have an issue with. That's too much. I mean, in the middle of an inning, you're going to check a guy? That's just ridiculous to me. Now, in terms of the Garrett Richards thing he brought up, I believe Garrett Richards' career is over. That's just how I feel. I don't think he's going to get his season back on track or his career back on track. We're clearly seeing he cannot pitch without the sticky stuff. But I heard Lou Maloney make this point earlier today, and it's a really good one. I'm jealous I didn't come up with it. I've always thought, first of all, that Tanner Houck eventually, obviously he's going to be up. We know he's got the stuff that plays at the major league level. I understood what they did at the beginning of the season. They want him to go down to AAA, develop that splitter so he has a third pitch against lefties. Okay, so I understand all of that. But when you look at it, he was dealing with the injury, so now he's making his way back. But when you look at this, this is the point that Lou is making. So we all knew that at some point Houck was going to be part of the equation. But if you look at this, Lou pointed this out today on OMF. Look at Houck's last two starts, right? So the first one, he goes three innings. He goes six strikeouts. He does not give up a hit. Last time out, last night, I should say, he goes 3 2/3. He does give up a home run. But nonetheless, the point being that his past two outings, you know when they've been? The same night that Garrett Richards pitched. The same night, right? So they obviously know that Garrett Richards, and how could they not know, right? I mean, this is a very smart organization with Chaim Bloom and Alex Cora. They are matching up Houck's outings right now with when Richards starts games. So when they need to pull the trigger and bring Houck up when he's ready, coming back from this injury, if you will, they can just put him into the Richards spot in the rotation. That's what they're preparing for right now. Bottom line, that's what they're preparing for right now. It's a great point by Lou that Houck is just going to be matched up the rest of his outings with Richards until Richards completely falls off a cliff and they put him in. So Houck is the answer to the Richards part of the equation. 617-779-7937, the number. Let's get to Sean in Idaho. What's up, Sean?
Hello. Yeah, thank you so much for taking my call. You know, I go over this whole road trip to start off with it. Okay, they went to Atlanta. They swept them. You know, that was not an easy series. They outscored them 20-16 in the two games. What really angered me the most about this trip was losing to Kansas City. Look, I didn't get a chance to visit with you about this or with WEEI since they were on the road and then they were in Kansas City. But the bottom line is, Red Sox, if you want to be good, you've got to beat the bad teams. I mean, look, 1-3 against the Rangers. You lose 2 out of 3 to the Royals. I mean, even a bit of trouble against the Tigers at home, that's not good either. I mean, this team cannot be losing to the bad teams. And then tonight's game was so winnable. I feel bad for Pavetta. He pitched a good game. He had a no-no going. And then, you know, the Red Sox offense, I'm just disgusted. How are you going to respond against New York if you're going to be like this? All you come up with is 4 hits, and you couldn't even get 1 run home. And also, I got to mention this, too.
Mm-hmm.
Bad decision to send the runner when it could have been 1st and 3rd in the 7th inning with 1 out. Bad decision to send the runner. Red Sox should have won the game. This was a winnable game tonight. They should still be in first place, not the Rays. Tampa Bay got a gift because of a bad pitch by Matt Barnes. I mean, the pitching was fine all night. I mean, Barnes just had that little accident, and if we get out of that, we could have gone into extras and could have won the game. I mean, I'm sure Pavetta is thinking right now, I pitched so well, And why couldn't the team just have a chance to do the
offense? Yeah, Sean, I don't think Pivetta thinks that way. Because remember, now last time out he was okay. He gave up that 3-run home run to Mondesi. But the two times before that, he was not good whatsoever. So I don't think he thinks that way, like, oh, the team let me down. Because there's been plenty of times this year where he has not pitched well. So I don't think Pivetta thinks that way at all or, like, thinks poorly of his – or has, like, a bad look at his teammates. And I don't buy that.
It can annoy, though, Brian. It can annoy any Red Sox fan when you realize that he's pitching a good game tonight and the offense cannot come up with one bleeping run.
Yeah, Sean, I agree with you.
Sean,
I agree with you. It sucks. Like, this is a tough way to lose a game for the Red Sox. There's no doubt about that whatsoever, especially considering that Barnes puts down Mejia on a curveball and that's how they win the game because it bounces away from Vasquez. I'm not disputing the fact that it's a difficult loss, but I don't think Pivetta has the resume to be, like, upset with how the team performed. It's not like Jacob deGrom going out there every night and putting up zeros. He had not pitched well this month up until this start.
Yeah, exactly. And then, you know, Vasquez made that throwing error. That was a costly thing. That really hurt a lot. I mean, and I know we got plenty more matchups against the Tampa Bay Rays, and who knows what that's going to be like down the road. I think they can do well against the Yankees. I mean, and I hope they can use this game as motivation because they need to at least win 2 out of 3 against the Yankees. And everybody says, oh, watch out, the Yankees are cut. I was saying it to you last night. I do not consider the Yankees to be a threat. A lot of the games that the Yankees have won have been luck. You know what? I told friends this a long time ago. What is it that the Yankees have that is so good for them? All they do is live and die with the home run ball. They don't do small ball. They also get their runs by RBI groundouts and by double plays. They are a horrible hitting team. Big deal that they beat the Royals today 8-1. Kansas City should have at least taken 2 out of 3. And Chapman is not one of their best closers right now because he's blowing games. I think Boston can do what they did in the early part of this month, and that is hopefully win 2 out of 3 or sweep. They need to win this series. And I still believe that the AL East is within reach for them to win. But clearly,
They're a half game back. Yeah. It's certainly in reach. And look, I appreciate the phone call as always. Yeah. His line's open if you want to grab it. It's 617-779-7937. Sure, the division's in reach. They're back a half a game. They came in tonight with the lead in the division. As it pertains to the Yankees, I don't believe that the Yankees are any sort of juggernaut or anything along those lines. But they're playing really good baseball right now. There's no doubt about that. They've been a lot better as of late. Now, the Chapman point is a good one. Chapman, and I'm sure we'll go through this over the next couple of nights as we watch the Red Sox and the Yankees. We talk about Garrett Richards being affected by the sticky stuff. Well, there's some evidence that right now, Aroldis Chapman is not that same dominant pitcher that he's been over the years because, quite frankly, he's not throwing the ball like he ordinarily does, and his whole spin rate situation has been affected. Let's get to David in Florida. David, what's up?
Brian, guess where I am right now?
Florida?
Yeah, well, I'm on my way home from St. Petersburg.
Oh, you went to the game?
I did, yesterday.
Nice.
And, you know, I tried to call you last night. But first of all, you know, I'm going to talk directly to the Red Sox. And I hope at least a couple of them happen to be foolish enough to be listening. Because you are all disgraceful. Nothing short of disgraceful. You're brainless. You have no respect for the fundamentals of the game. And you're like the scarecrows out there. I mean, you're just idiotic and you just disgrace the uniforms you're wearing. Now, that being said,
let him know, David.
I mean, I'm just getting started. You know, I mean, Cora. I mean, I'm getting fed up with him now.
All right, What did Cora do tonight, David? Cora do that was wrong? I mean, come on.
Joe was talking about it today, and Funball, and I mean, last he's overusing Barnes. The other guy who came in today, the guy with that porn mustache from the 7, what's his name? The
Josh Taylor.
I mean, why did they bring him in last night? I mean, Cora doesn't do anything to jumpstart the game. I want Belichick to coach the Red Sox, like I've said before. All I hear about on the radio is everybody agreeing with me that they have no fundamentals, their defense is horrible. But I don't hear any solutions. I mean, I mean, sure, Scherzer would be a great signing. Yes, they have not rent him, but they would have to sign him for another 2 or 3 years. If they could like a sign-in trade, then there's
a
no
sign-in trade. What is this, the NBA now, David?
I don't know. Something like that.
He's a Scott Boras guy, by the way, too. You think he's not going to go to free agency?
I mean, they've got to, you know, this team is like the Red Celtics. They have no leadership. They're deaf, dumb, and blind. They think they're playing pinball baseball.
David, they're a half game back in the division.
Everybody else is stupid, too. The Red Sox, I believe, without a doubt, believe that every single person on that team is okay with committing 2 or 3, 4 errors a game. They probably believe that they can make 2 or 3 errors a game and come back up and hit a 5-run homer and win the game in the bottom of the ninth. I mean, it's just ludicrous the way they play the game. It's disgraceful.
Yeah, I don't think, David, I appreciate the phone call as always. I would not categorize the Red Sox right now as disgraceful. I would not say that's the word that I would use to describe the Boston Red Sox. Was tonight a frustrating loss? Yes, but they're 44-31. They are 24-14 on the road. They are a half game back in the division. To use the word disgraceful as it pertains to the Red Sox this year is just, it's kind of out of bounds, man. I mean, come on, get it together.
That was just a disgrace.
I know you're pissed off that you went to the game in St. Pete, and I'm glad the Red Sox had David watching them at the game tonight. I know you're mad that they lost tonight, and it's a really aggravating loss, right? Especially considering the outing that you got from Nick Pivetta. It's incredibly frustrating as a fan of the team. I understand all that. But to say this team is disgraceful, come on. Give me a break.
That was a disgraceful performance.
What's that from, Nick LePan, who's producing?
That's Mora.
Oh, Jim Mora. Okay, all right, yeah. All right, 617-779-7937, the number. Brian Barrett with you up until midnight. What do you make of the most recent loss for the Red Sox? And there's one move the Red Sox have to make. They have to make it now. I'll get into that in just a little bit here on WEI.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medela is the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.
You're listening to Red Sox Review on WEEI.
With you until midnight, 617-779-7937, the number. After the Sox fall to the Rays tonight, they dropped 2 of 3 in the series. They had taken over first place in the division, not because of what they did, but really more about what the Rays did. They had lost 6 consecutive games entering the series, and they ended up making 7 straight games after, of course, they lost the opening game to the Red Sox. But nonetheless, the Red Sox had a chance to leave Tampa with the lead in the division, even despite the fact they lost last night. Unfortunately, they don't do it. Now, there is one move, as I said, that the Red Sox need to make, and they need to make it right now. The Asdrubal Cabrera thing that I mentioned, ESPN Plus suggested it first, so I don't want to take credit for that idea, but I love the idea that ESPN Plus came up with. He's a perfect fit for this Red Sox team as a platoon guy at first base because you don't have an answer internally to play at first base outside of Bobby Dalbec. Marwin's not that guy. We know Michael Chavis is not that guy. You don't have another option at first base, and Danny Santana is definitely not that guy. So anyway, I love the Asdrubal Cabrera idea because it's going to cost you next to nothing. Now, the move that they need to make right now is Jarren Durant's got to be up at the big club. There's no other way around it. And I know that Alex Cora and Chaim Bloom continue to be asked about that. And Alex Cora referenced the fact earlier this week when he hit a walk-off home run, Cora referenced the fact, well, he also struck out in that game 3 times. Like, I understand all that. But you have a bunch of high strikeout guys on the team to begin with. And right now, one of the things that I would argue is this team needs a jolt of energy. This team needs a shot in the arm. you look at a team like the Tampa Bay Rays, and I know every situation is different, right? But Tampa's offense had been putrid over the past month, and they needed somebody to bring energy to the team. And they bring up Wander Franco. Now, tonight, he had no chance against Nick Pivetta whatsoever, but you can't tell me he didn't have a massive impact on the series, especially considering what he did last night. Even the game they lost, he had a home run. Remember, off Eduardo Rodriguez. So he's a real big contributor to that team. Well, the Red Sox need that same thing from Jaron Duran. You look at Franco when he was called up. 315 batting average. Okay, that's really good, obviously. Duran right now is hitting 295. And by the way, he had another two hits tonight. Now, the Wu Sox got absolutely killed, but he had two hits on the night. So anyway, so all right, Franco's got him in terms of the average. And I'm not comparing the two prospects. I'm just telling you that there's evidence that this guy's ready to play at the big league level right now. Okay, 367 on base percentage when Franco was called up. You know what Duran's on base percentage is right now? 381, advantage Duran. Slugging percentage, Franco is at 586. Duran is at 627, advantage Duran. OPS over 1,000 for Duran. OPS for Franco, 954. Seven home runs for Franco when he was called up. Duran, 13 home runs. Okay, you cannot tell me. Here's the thing. I understand, like, if this team was continuing to roll and they were up five games in the division, four games in the division, and you had solutions with your roster, you were hitting the ball like crazy. Well, you're not right now, okay? You're not hitting the ball well. You didn't score a single run tonight. So when you look at it from that perspective, you're hitting Michael Chavis in the leadoff spot tonight. You hit Danny Santana in the leadoff spot the previous two games. You've hit Kike Hernandez in the leadoff spot, who for his career has an on-base percentage of 310. Christian Arroyo, okay, maybe that's a solution, but right now he's on the injured list. And they hope that to have him back in 8 days or whatever it is, because it was retroactive like 2 days ago when they put him on the injured list. But obviously that knee has not responded the way that they originally anticipated that it was going to respond. But even with Christian Arroyo back in the fold, you need a jolt of energy with this team. And that guy is Jaron Duran. You have him ready to go at the AAA level. And here's the thing about Duran. This is the difference between Duran and Franco. Obviously, Franco's the number one prospect in baseball. Can't miss guy and all that. But Duran is not a kid. Duran is older than Devers. He's a month older than Rafael Devers. It's time to bring this guy up. And here's the other thing that I would mention. And here's maybe a theory on why the Red Sox have been kind of, I don't want to say loose with the leadoff position because that's not the term I'm looking for. But this is why the Red Sox have been willing to try different guys out at the leadoff spot. Is because if you look at where Jaron Duran's hitting in the order down in AAA, oh yeah, he's hitting leadoff. He's hitting leadoff. So that's what makes me think, okay, maybe the Red Sox are just playing around, not playing around, but handling the leadoff position the way they are, which is not making a permanent change there. Because here's the thing. If you put Verdugo in the leadoff spot, that's a permanent change. You don't take Verdugo out of the leadoff spot. You put him there, you leave him there. And Verdugo, as we all know, had a lot of success hitting in the leadoff spot last season. His on-base percentage was over 350 in the leadoff spot. He hit over 300 on the season, the short season, and he hit over 300 when he was actually in the leadoff spot as well. So if you put Verdugo there, that's a permanent solution. Putting Kike Hernandez there, which, by the way, Alex Cora said he's not doing that anymore. Putting Danny Santana there or Michael Chavis there, those are not long-term solutions for the team, right? So maybe they're just keeping that seat warm for when Jaron Duran gets called up. But I would argue right now what this team needs is a guy like Jaron Duran. And you heard Alex Cora after the game tonight. It felt like Alex Cora was speaking to his team when he's up there at the podium or whatever it is, the Zoom call. I don't even know what to call it nowadays. But anyway, when he's up there talking about the fact that we're a good team, nobody expected us to be here. And tonight's game was evidence that they're going to have a great summer in Boston and all that. I feel like right now his team is down after losing 2 of 3 to the Rays, after losing 2 of 3 to the Royals, because let's be real, the Red Sox are playing some of their worst baseball of the season right now. And you have this whole Garrett Richards dilemma as well, where he's probably not part of the equation going forward because he can't figure out how to pitch without the sticky stuff. So it's going to be an incredibly frustrating week for that team, especially considering you win the game on Tuesday night to take the first game of the series on the Rays. You're up a game and a half in the division at that particular point in time. And then basically you come into the game last night and your pitcher does not give you a chance to win. And quite frankly, he has been horrible his last two outings. So that's going to be just a defeating thing, not just by losing the game, but just the way you lost, where from a team standpoint, you were never in it because your starting pitcher didn't give you an opportunity. And then tonight, when your starting pitcher does give you the opportunity, like Nick Pivetta does, when he gives you 6 2/3 scoreless innings, and he's absolutely incredible, and he's got a fastball up to 99 miles an hour at points tonight, and then you don't bail him out, and you lose the game on the base paths when Hunter Renfroe gets a bad jump on the ball that Christian Vasquez hit into center field, and then he hesitates coming around third base. Like, as a team, that's going to be incredibly infuriating to lose a game that way. And so when you look at all these things and you think about it, you're going into the biggest series of the year against the Yankees. You need a jolt of energy, and Jarren Duran's the guy that can bring that to this team. And maybe they're just waiting until they desperately need him, but I would argue right now is a time that you desperately could use a guy like Jarren Duran in your everyday lineup. And we've been talking about the leadoff spot all season long. Okay, well, here's the thing I would say to Alex Cora and to Chaim Bloom about that. If you want to put Alex Verdugo there, fine. Okay, that's the solution, and then you can wait on Jarren Duran. But if you're going to keep doing this crap with the leadoff position, where unfortunately now Arroyo's dealing with an injury, if you're going to continue to go with Kike Hernandez and Michael Chavis tonight and Danny Santana tonight, well, then you need to bring up Jarren Duran. So either you go with the permanent solution, which is putting Verdugo there right now, or you bring up Jarren Duran. Those are your two options right now, because you cannot continue to have a dead out in your leadoff spot. It's just not a way to win baseball games at a high level, especially considering the fact that this is a really good division and you're putting Danny Santana. Think about this. You're in a situation where you're playing for first place in the division this week. In two of those games, Danny Santana is hitting leadoff. The guy's hitting below 130. All right, so if you're not going to put Verdugo there, bring up Jarren Duran now. I don't understand it. I really don't. It's incredibly infuriating. It's one of the blind spots with Alex Cora where he cannot figure out the leadoff spot. He did it in 19. He's doing it again this year. If you're not going to put Verdugo there, then bring up Duran, because it's unfair to the team to put Santana or Chavis in that spot. I'm sorry, and quite frankly, it's not only unfair to the team, but it's unfair to Kike Hernandez when he's hitting leadoff, because he's not a leadoff hitter. Have you seen the guy's approach at the plate? He's a free swinger. That's what he is. He's a free swinger. He doesn't walk. So why would you put him in the leadoff spot? It just doesn't make any sense to me whatsoever. All right, 617-779-7937 is the number. Brian Barrett with you up until midnight. I do want to do this because the Red Sox are going to be honoring Dustin Pedroia tomorrow night. Pedroia is going to have like his moment. I don't know exactly what's going to transpire. I'm going to watch it. I'm sure it's going to be entertaining as he announced his retirement, of course, over the winter. But here's my question about Dustin Pedroia. Out of the World Series team, so the World Series era, so to speak, I'm not going back to Ted Williams and Fisk and Jim Rice and Freddie Lynn and all these guys. I'm talking about from the World Series era. So the David Ortiz, the Manny Ramirez is the world. That era of Red Sox, where does Dustin Pedroia rank among position players? Not pitchers, Schilling's not in the equation, Pedro, John Lester, etc., Josh Beckett. Where does Dustin Pedroia rank in terms of the position players in the World Series era? I'll tell you next right here on WEA. All right, with you until midnight. So Dustin Pedroia is going to get honored before the game tomorrow night. The one thing I don't like about the whole Dustin Pedroia era, if you will, the only thing I dislike about it is sort of how it ended for Pedroia. Unfortunately, the knee issue, but also the whole thing with where the whole Machado thing, like, I mean, not the whole Machado thing, but the whole thing with Pedroia when he was upset when they threw at the opponents. Remember that whole thing at the end? And he was telling them, hey, it was them, it wasn't me. Remember that whole situation? Pedroia, I didn't like that. I didn't care for that. But when you look at Pedroia in his career, my question is, where does he rank in terms of the World Series guys? Not going back to Yaz and Ted Williams and Fisk, etc., but this most recent run for the Red Sox, really since 2004 on. So the World Series era, as I like to call it, for the Red Sox, where does Pedroia rank amongst position players? So obviously there's two guys that go in front of Pedroia. The obvious one's Ortiz, three-time World Series champ, of course. 483 home runs as a member of the Red Sox. Final season, he had an OPS over 1,000 and slugged a career-best 620. And nobody will ever forget the 13 World Series. 688, 760 on-base percentage, 1,900 OPS, and two home runs. And oh, by the way, he had a great American League Championship Series against the Yankees, as we all remember back in the day. And the other guy that you have to put number two on the list is Manny. I know it didn't end well, but 312 as a Red Sox, 411 on base percentage as a Red Sox, 999 OPS, 236 home runs, 804 RBIs, seven-time All-Star. Every year with the Red Sox, he was an All-Star. Hit at least 30 home runs in every one of those years, including he hit 45, 42. By the way, Ortiz hit 54 one year as a member of the team. He had a 13.6% walk rate for his career, just absolutely unbelievable. And remember, he won the World Series MVP when he hit 412, 500 on base percentage, 1088 OPS. So those are the two guys I think we would all agree would be the top two in the World Series era. And then it comes, okay, well, who's the third best position player from the World Series era, if you will, as Pedroia gets ready to be honored tomorrow night? I believe right now Pedroia is it. Okay, so if you look at Pedroia's career, we all know some of the resume. Four-time All-Star, two-time World Series champ, I guess. Well, I guess technically three, but he only played on two of the teams. Remember, he didn't play in 18. Rookie of the Year in 07, MVP in 08, four-time Gold Glove winner, Silver Slugger Award winner in 08, of course, with the MVP. Career 299 hitter, 365 on base percentage, 805 OPS. The most home runs he ever hit in a season, though, 21. And he only hit over 20 once. His MVP season, 17 home runs. He did steal 20 bases as well. I think the most impressive thing about Dustin Pedroia was just how difficult of an at-bat he was for the opposition. He had a 9.7% strikeout rate for his career. That's incredible. It'd be third in baseball this season. And that was his career strikeout rate. So he's incredibly difficult to strike out, right? That's probably the most impressive thing. That 07 playoff run, he was really good in that one. 348 on base percentage, 832 OPS, two home runs. And so I would say right now he's third in terms of the World Series era Red Sox, in terms of the best players from that era. It would be David Ortiz, number one, Manny Ramirez, number two, and Dustin Pedroia, number three. But I feel like what's going to happen in short order here is Bogarts is going to pass him. Bogarts is already a two-time World Series champ. And remember in 13 when he came up, when he was, what, 21 years old, you didn't really have a solution at third base. He was kind of platooning with Will Middlebrooks, if you remember. And he comes up and he is way better than Middlebrooks and he has a really good postseason run. If you go back to, remember the ALCS against the Tigers, obviously, Ortiz hits that huge home run in what was a Game 3, the Grand Slam. But also, if you look at it in terms of, or was that Game 2? Anyway, he hit that huge Grand Slam. You all remember what I'm talking about. But anyway, that ALCS as a rookie, he was 3-for-6. He also walked three times, 500 in terms of his average, and he had an OPS over 1,600. He was really good in that particular series. And if you look at the numbers for Bogarts, already has 131 home runs in his career as a member of this team. And Pedroia had 140. His career is obviously over. He's getting honored tomorrow night. 574 RBIs. Bogarts has a better OPS at 813. Pedroia has the advantage in average and OBP, but Bogarts, as I said, his numbers are going up over the past couple of years, and he's only 9 home runs shy of passing Dustin Pedroia. Postseason numbers are not great. That's the one thing in terms of his postseason. Now, he was good as a rookie in 13 in terms of that Tiger series, but other than that, was not great in that postseason run at the plate, so to speak. And 18 did not have a great postseason. But really, I mean, so when you think about it, though, Bogarts is going to have this season where he finishes, in all likelihood, to put it safely, he'll finish in the top five in the MVP in the American League. He'll probably finish in the top three. You got Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and Otani will probably be 1 and 2. Bogarts has a real good chance to be number three on that list. And at the very least, he's going to be somewhere in the top five. Maybe one of the Astros gets into the conversation as well. Maybe somebody from the White Sox. But when you look at it, I believe in about a year and a half, 2 years, as long as Bogarts re-signs with this team, Bogarts will pass Pedroia in terms of the World Series era Red Sox. You can't put Mookie on there just because he's no longer a member of the organization. And in 18, when they won the World Series, I get an MVP regular season, hit 346, outstanding season. Nobody's ever going to take anything away from him when it comes to the regular season. But he only hit 210 in that postseason run. And remember, he didn't hit a home run until the clincher against the Dodgers. So he didn't hit a home run in that playoff run until essentially things were over. I mean, that World Series was over when he hit that home run. And JD just does not have the longevity as a member of the Red Sox to be considered to be over Pedroia right now. But definitely when you look at it in terms of Bogarts, he will pass Pedroia in terms of being the third best player of this World Series era, if you will. So I would have Ortiz 1, obviously Manny 2, Pedroia 3 for now, and then Bogaerts is probably going to pass him in the near future here. All right, thanks to Nick LaPan for producing. We'll be back with you tomorrow night after the Red Sox and the Yankees. Have a great night, everybody. Be safe and be well.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.